Welcome to another episode of the Divorce Survival Guide podcast, where we have real, honest, smart, and sometimes even hilarious conversations about co-parenting, separation, and divorce, and all that goes along with that. I'm Kate Anthony, your divorce survival guide, certified life and relationship coach, and happily divorced mom who helps women decide if they should stay in or leave their marriages and then guides them through the process one step at a time. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Divorce Survival Guide podcast. I just have one announcement today before we get into the podcast, and that is that I am running my super popular webinar, Should You Stay in Your Marriage for Your Kids? Three Truths Revealed. Again, I have one coming up tomorrow, Tuesday, April 23rd, and if you missed that one, I'll be doing it again on May 7th. So be sure to hop on over to the show notes to register for that as soon as possible, and I'll probably be throwing a few more on the calendar as we move forward. There'll be a link in the show notes, and the next dates will just show up automatically as I add them. Again, the topic is, should you stay in your marriage for your kids? Three truths revealed. Don't miss it. Sign up for it. It's awesome. All right. So back to today's guest. So most topics of conversation within my Facebook groups, with my clients, and in my programs usually come down to one thing: boundaries. If you're in an unhappy marriage, if you're getting divorced, if you're already divorced, boundaries are constantly shifting and changing. You may be setting boundaries for the first time in your life. You might be having to hold your boundaries more firmly than ever before. You might be listening to this and thinking, fuck, I really need to get some boundaries. Whatever the case may be, I have got you covered today. When I first started out trying to set my own boundaries, it was so god-awfully messy. The only way I knew how to set a boundary was really firmly, like really bitchy. Like, fuck you, this is the new me, don't step over this line that I just created, and if you do, you're going to get your head bitten off. And weirdly, it didn't go so well for any of the relationships I was in. If only I'd known how to set healthy boundaries that were kind, both to myself and to others. Well, fortunately, Randy Buckley is in the world today, and she is here to talk about just that. Randy actually runs a program called Healthy Boundaries for Kind People. And I gotta say, talking with Randy about boundaries is one of my favorite things to do because her perspective on it is so different and so fresh, and it makes more sense to me than just about anything else I've ever read on the subject. Randy also has a podcast of her own starting up on May 13th. So if you go to her website, which is randybuckley.com, but you'll find it in the show notes. And if you follow her on Instagram, also linked in the show notes, you'll not only get a wealth of super amazing information, but you'll also get notified when her podcast is up and running. And I got to tell you guys, this is one that I am super excited about and I will subscribe to the minute it hits iTunes. Without further ado, please welcome to the podcast my friend and colleague, Randy Buckley. Randy, thank you so much for coming on to talk to my people about boundaries. Probably one of the most important conversations that anyone can have ever.
I agree.
Yeah. In the personal development world in particular. And I think you have such a unique perspective on it and an important perspective. So I'm just going to turn it over to you to start the conversation about how you view boundaries.
For me, there's not one definition that encompasses boundaries. I'm not particularly pedantic, so I don't get married to just one thing. In general, so I have lots of different definitions for boundaries. And I think boundaries are the infrastructure for who we want to be and the life we want to live in our world.
I love that. love that. So that's the meme that's going to go along with it.
Oh. Excellent.
That'll be the meme.
Okay. Yeah. So, and boundaries are a lot of different things in different contexts and different times to different people. But by and large, I really see it as the architecture really for how we want to live. And I like that way of describing it, because I think the conventional definition of boundaries, as we use it in the industries we're in, is about keeping things out and keeping people out. And it's about really serving as a barrier. Mm. For me, there certainly is that function to it. But for me, boundaries are much more about cultivating what I want inside my life. I see it less as a barrier, but a semi-permeable membrane. I can send out whatever I want to the world, but I get to be really conscious and intentional about what comes in. And that happens through, you know, my values, but really what I want my world to be and how I want people to behave within it. My boundaries become those values in action.
Yes. Let's talk about that, because you have this beautiful linking of boundaries and values.
Yes.
And really our values inform what our boundaries are going to be, right?
Right.
Can you say more about that?
Sure. So I'm thinking in the context of somebody who might be listening to this wonderful podcast of yours, and you are really in, I can imagine, a very tough spot emotionally, really on every possible level. It's tough. It's hard.
Right.
And if you think, you know, okay, what are my values? And what does that mean? How does that relate to boundaries? I would actually look at it as, how do you want this process to be? Who do you want to be after this? And what do you want to look back and be able to be proud of that you did during this time? And those become the values by which you use, they become a compass, really. Mm. A North Star or Southern Cross, for reference, in the Southern Hemisphere, to really steer by. And figure out what to do. So if we take a value, so if, for example, if you want it to be respectful, compassionate, autonomous, whatever those things are, and there are no right or wrong ones, just what you want.
Right, right.
You take that and you think, okay, you know, let's just use respect as an example. What would respect do now? You know, what value is missing? Okay, it might be respect. So how do we call forth more respect into the situation? How do I call it for myself? How do I call it in from other people? You know, a big one for me is humor. It's a very big value. So I was, okay, what would humor do right now? What's missing from this in humor?
I love the idea of values being like a person or a being, right? Mm-hmm. They're not static,
right?
They're not inanimate, right? They're actually, they have life to them in this way. Like what would the value of X do or be or say in this moment?
Exactly. Yeah. And then I think if you take whatever that value is and you really think of, okay, how can I turn this into a verb? That's what you do. So when you don't know what else to do, you can really look at what value you want to honor or what value is missing. And that you turn that into a verb, and that really becomes instructive for what your boundary needs to be.
Say more about that. So let's give an example.
Sure. So if I really want to, if I value kindness, for example, or I feel kindness is missing, I can look at the situation and say, what would, you know, just what we're talking about, what would kindness do here? Mm. Kindness toward, and I think it goes, you could say a version of this for any of those values. You know, my belief is if your kindness does not include yourself or the things that are important to you, it is ultimately incomplete. It is ultimately not fully kind. So we have to look at, okay, what would kindness do here? How can I have more kindness for me? What is kind to me? How can I evoke more kindness or invite more kindness from the situation? What would be kind? And sometimes it's very different than what would be nice. That's a whole different podcast for me.
Right.
Nice versus kind is a big thing for me. But
yes.
How then do I think, okay, kindness would do what? And then I get to become that action. I get to become that way of being. Hmm. So that if nothing else, my value of kindness is being honored by me.
Yes. And then if other people in our lives are not honoring that as a boundary, right? Because that right there is a boundary. Absolutely. And then if other people in our lives are not honoring that,
yes,
it becomes really clear when we're honoring our values deeply for ourselves.
Yes.
Right. We're always like, he's not doing this or he's doing this or whatever. But when we first, you know, turn off the magnifying glass and pick up the mirror.
Right.
And we look at how we are being with ourselves and how much we are honoring those values. It becomes really clear, right? Like there's like a,
painfully clear.
Painfully clear, right?
Exactly.
Yes. He's not, you know, he's not treating me with love and respect. Am I treating myself with love and respect?
Right. Exactly. And often I think we almost wait for somebody else to validate our boundaries by coming up with or honoring them before we'll allow ourselves to have that boundary or feeling like I can't treat myself with love and respect. And somebody else does it. Oh gosh, I can too. Whereas I think it's just the opposite. Often if we're treating ourselves with love and respect, for example, people will not always, but often they'll rise to the occasion. Or at least, if nothing else, they'll see that that is the bottom line right here.
Yes. Yep. And, you know, and often, you know, this was my experience in my divorce for sure, was that I certainly wasn't treating myself with the love and respect and kindness that that I was demanding from my husband. And ultimately, my path out of my marriage was to begin to do that. Mm-hmm. And when I started to do that more and more and more, this relationship just no longer matched. Like it was, you know, I was agonizing and struggling with my, you know, with the question, should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go? I was agonizing for so long. And as the more I just answered the question for myself about what is it that I wanted, you know, putting it back on me, right? And treated myself with love and kindness and respect. This relationship no longer aligned with who I was and what I valued. And the question got answered.
Yes. Yes.
I was sort of looking in the wrong place. Right?
I love that you did that. And I imagine it was very challenging and possibly quite painful to really look at that and be honest about, am I offering myself that love and respect or whatever somebody else wants to have honored by somebody else? Because right. I find in general, not necessarily just in this context, but in general, those of us who feel challenged by having boundaries, when we really look at it, sometimes we're not really so great at honoring other people's boundaries,
yes.
including our own. And that's sometimes a very, what's the word in English? Very painful. it just makes you feel sick to your stomach. Am I really not doing this? And that's often the case. Not always.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's the case. But I really like what you said, because I think that's true. And then when we do start doing what kindness or what love and respect to do, and when we do include that in ourselves and that part of the equation, the answers often come.
You guys, warmer, sunnier days are calling, and you're going to want to fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved, and they're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you're always going to have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. And I know that's really important to you guys right now. You're going through a hard time. You're in emotional upheaval, maybe some chaos, really good, healthy, nutritious meals in 2 minutes. And I'm telling you, they're so good. You've got 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week. And you'll always have new flavors to explore. Treat yourself to restaurant quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, blackened salmon. Ugh, so good, you guys. So head to factormeals.com/DSG50 and use code DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month. So the code is DSG50 at factormeals.com/DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model. So that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free. free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
So let's sort of go back. So we sort of took a sidebar, but not really into values.
Sure.
So in the way that you talk about them, they're so interconnected. We always talk about setting boundaries. And as you said, we talk about it as if we're sort of keeping people or things or ideas or experiences out.
Right.
And sometimes that's actually the case, right?
And sometimes that's needed. Absolutely.
You know, one of the things that comes up a lot in my work is people who are dealing with narcissists, in particular malignant narcissists, right? And everything you read out there is go no contact, go right. no contact, which is a solid, firm boundary.
Right.
When you have children with this person, right. that's not an option. You don't get to go no contact.
Right.
But you have to be able to set boundaries. You have to be able to set boundaries that are safe and healthy for yourself, but that also allow communication and collaboration in service of your children.
Exactly.
What do they do? Where do they look to figure out how to set these kinds of boundaries?
That's a tough one. And I saw my sister really, you know, it checked every box and go to every box.
That's right. I forgot about that. That's true. Right. Yeah.
So in fact, she had the additional challenges many people might of having, a judge's no contact order placed on things. But at the same time, if there's a child involved, what exactly does that mean?
Did the judge specify in that case? I mean,
I don't remember all the details, but I know that was used as then a loophole for somebody who shouldn't be contacting her to try to contact her for lots of other reasons, if mm-hmm. nothing else, to text her ridiculous photos, demeaning photos. It was bad. So I think when you're in that situation where ideally, if you could control all the shots, you might say no contact. And that in and of itself is sometimes challenging enough to maintain.
Yeah.
Especially if somebody keeps contacting you or you feel like you want to be in touch, you know, you decide you want to have a conversation. But when you have little people involved, or other people involved, I think you need I talked about boundaries being an infrastructure architecture. You almost need a safe landing place for those conversations to have. Even though you'd like it to be no contact, you really get to decide what those conversations, what the container is for them. And
yes.
for some people, I know if people have the ability, that there are people who help facilitate those conversations where everything is copied on for a third party. You're probably much more aware of the options about this than I am. It might be that you really say, these are the terms and conditions of our conversations. They are to the point. They're three sentences, whatever makes sense. And if somebody deviates from that, you remind them, these are the terms and conditions. And then if they really deviate from that and or do it again, then you say, you've violated the boundaries. We need to find another way to do this because this is not working. And then you have to go back to square one to some degree. Yeah.
Yes.
Figure out what that looks like.
And that's really a pattern. It's sort of, you know, that is exactly what I tell people, when I tell my clients. So thank you for backing that up. That's good. Good to know. But yeah, I mean, there are communication tools such as our Family Wizard, which are online communication tools that are actually monitored by the courts. They have a tone monitor on it so that if you start to type something, you can have it look over what you've said and it'll flag things that they're like, this is a little inflammatory. You might want to consider rewording this.
Right.
And attorneys and judges have access to it. It's a brilliant tool when you really do need to kind of go no contact, but also have conversations. Right.
Right.
And I do like what you said about the idea that there's sort of this formula for mm-hmm. breaking boundaries, right? It's like, you know, one time you say, no, this is what the boundary is.
Right.
And even often this isn't, here's the thing. People that you have the most trouble with boundaries with are not people who are here to respect them. So they're going to violate them. So you have to be prepared,
right?
Like I talk to people a lot about sort of like creating scripts, like just like, you know, this is what, when he says this, you say this. When he says this, you say, and I talk a lot about in setting these boundaries and sort of always coming back to the same thing. You just kind of always say the same thing, right? Like, I'm sorry, but I'm not comfortable having this kind of conversation right now. And then he's going to continue to try and have that conversation, especially because you said you didn't feel comfortable having it, right?
Absolutely.
And yes. Then you just repeat it and repeat it. And then when there's a complete violation, it's like, all right, so now we have to, now we're going back to square one.
Exactly. And, you know, when I gave that example from my sister's experience, it actually became a really big chunk or a piece of the work that I do with boundaries. And I ask clients, I say, are you serious about your boundaries? Because, and this is the example I give, and because I think it illustrates it so well. So there was a no contact order. Somebody would text her and she texts back, hey, there's a no contact order. You're not supposed to text me. And then this person texts back, hey, what about Wednesday night? Can I see the child then? Da, da, da. And she'd write back, Wednesday night doesn't work for me. By the way, there's a no contact order. Don't text me. Yeah. And it became like tennis, to the point where when she went to have that no contact order, and I don't know all the terminology, essentially renewed, all the other person's texts were shown to her, to the judge. And the judge said, clearly you're not serious about your own request. You contacted all these times. So it shows that we're not, while we want to be taken seriously, we're not honoring it ourselves. And yes. Sometimes people don't see or know there's a boundary until we actually honor it. and sometimes it's a mistake. Totally. They just don't realize it. They didn't hear it. It didn't click. But until we actually are really effing serious that we mean it, sometimes it's the first time it actually occurs to people.
Absolutely. Yes, totally. Yeah. And you can totally curse on my podcast. Have you met me?
I think fucking in me thanks the fucking in you.
I think you know well enough by now, Randy Buckley. So yes, right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like even saying like, no, you're not allowed to contact me is engaging. You're literally just got on the court. I love that you just said it's like a game of tennis. Like, yes, you literally just stepped on the court. You picked up your racket. Mm-hmm. Don't step on the court. Don't
exactly.
Pick up your racket. If he contacts you and you have a no contact order, don't respond.
Right. And so her doing this thing of trying to remind this person and thinking she was being kind and giving this person another chance actually was held against her right. In the end. First of all, it wasn't honoring her own boundary, but it was actually turned around on her. And I don't know that happens often. I don't know the situations, but for me, it just illustrates that point of if you don't take your own boundary seriously, not many other people will.
Including judges.
Absolutely. Because they look for, you know, evidence. that's what it's about.
That's what it's about. That's really, really interesting. I often say this. I often put it this way, and it sort of goes a little bit against your idea that about not, you know, it's not always about keeping things out. But here's what I always say. But I always say that boundaries are like, it's like you have a house in the middle of the woods, and you have bears and deer and stuff that come into your garden and they're eating up your garden, right? And you would never expect them to build the fence or the wall or whatever it was to keep them out from doing what they've always done and what has never seemed to have been a problem up until this point, right? You have to be the one to go outside and build the fence, and then you kind of have to man the fence. You have to like stand sentry. And when they come, shoo them away. And, you know, oh, look, there's a hole that they keep getting through. Again, it's not their job to not go through it. They're just doing what they've always done.
Exactly.
It's our job to find the holes and to fill them. And it's hard work.
Yes. And
it can be hard work.
And I think we often get resentful that why do I have to be the one who's always, you know, doing the right thing or taking the initiative or mending the fence, so to speak. Right. And I think you were the one time and time again, even though when we get tired of it, because it matters to us.
Because they're our boundaries, right? I always say like, I used to say this all the time, my mom has no boundaries. And it's like, well, they're not her boundaries. They're mine. If I'm pissed that she can. Now my mother's great. My mother, somebody once described it, said, you know, you set a boundary and your mother sees it as a goalpost.
Definition, I mean, or a good explanation.
It's so true.
Yeah.
So how do you set boundaries with someone who literally was like, oh, it's a boundary. And they literally see it as a target.
Right.
They now have to hit.
Right. And I love that idea about your the house in the forest and you have to put up some fencing. Right. Not decorate with honey. And wonder
right.
where to bring them.
Right. But,
so I use a lot of metaphor, simile, and analogy in the work I do. And one of those that I use are boundaries of like a garden. Mm. And in our garden, so we get to cultivate what we want within the garden, but the garden still has a garden gate, which is our bottom line. Mm. And that bottom line, if somebody cannot meet the condition of whatever that value is at that garden gate, and I often use respect as an example, it's different for everybody. They don't come into the garden. We come out from the middle of the garden, we go to the edge and talk over the garden gate, and we honor that value of respect, but they don't come in. And it's by how we engage with them that I say they get to come into the next level or not. Mm-hmm. So maybe they're absolutely cool there, they've got it, and the next layer is compassion, or the next layer is humor, kindness, beauty, whatever, creativity. Then they can come in and kind of see where they're at that layer. But if somebody's not coming into your garden at all you have to do is go to the edge and honor your boundary right there. We don't do anything else that might engage them into more dialogue, into more activity, whatever. And sometimes when I talk about this garden analogy, I'll talk about a satellite garden where it's not necessarily part of the regular garden, but this might be a good example of the no contact order or very limited contact. Where you take a round trip ticket to this garden, you always buy a round trip ticket because you don't want to stay there. But it's a place where you have overlapping values with the other person that while you might not take all your value, you know, you always are all your values, you might not be able to honor every single one of them there, but you won't honor anything that's not a value there. Mm. And you meet them in this satellite, this little garden that's just designed for the situation, and then you come back. And that becomes a little bit more neutral ground, whether that is monitored, whether that is whatever you need it to be, temporary, sometimes it's permanent, to be the common ground where you figure this out.
Yes.
And then you both leave it.
Yes. Yeah. And a great example of this is so important because a great example of this is couples therapy.
Yes.
And or mediation. And I have tons of clients who are like, they're like, I tried to have this conversation with him. And I'm like, that's why you're paying a mediator.
Right.
That is not, you are not coming home from mediation and then having the conversation about who's keeping the house or custody arrangements or, you know, child support. Those are all conversations that are happening in the satellite garden of mediation.
Right.
Or the satellite garden of couples therapy. Do right. not have the conversation at home.
Right.
Period.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. That's such a great example. And that satellite garden or sometimes my client called it their island, my so-and-so island.
Yeah. Great. I love it. I love this
island. I took a cruise. I took a cruise to the island. That's been a good one. We had got norovirus. Obvious ideas. But that's that place where those happen. And if we try to bring it into our garden then and have that conversation, it doesn't feel good. And all of a sudden we just brought them into the garden. We just disregarded the boundaries we put forth, the space that was important to us. And in this case, the mediator that we're paying to make a mess of it. I mean, right. That gives you structure that way. This island, this garden, this mediator, it's one of the biggest gifts I think you can give to yourself in that process.
Yes.
It's huge. Yeah.
Yes. And then another boundary becomes, we're not having this conversation outside of mediation.
Absolutely. Yes.
I hear that you want to have this conversation. I want to figure this out too, right? There's compassion, there's kindness,
absolutely.
There's respect. I totally hear that you really want to get this sorted out. I really want to get this sorted out too. And we can't have this conversation outside of mediation. I'm happy to talk about it the next time we meet.
That's great. And right. I think sometimes when I put it through my kind people lens, I'm going to be much more willing to have this conversation. I'm going to be much more open to what you bring up when we have it here. It's like, you're going to get like a much better version of me at the mediator
right.
everywhere else. So it actually behooves us all to follow this so that we're in a good place. You know, we've got people supporting us so that we can get the best possible result.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's talk about kind people, because your program, your brand is Healthy Boundaries for Kind People.
Right.
So this is not about, you know, as our friend Amy Smith says, you know, how to stand up for yourself without being a dick.
Right.
Right. We don't have to, like, boundaries don't have to be, I think a lot of people don't have boundaries, especially women. We have trouble with boundaries because we think we're being unkind or we're being a dick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. For me, boundaries are an extension of kindness.
Yes.
Boundaries are an act of love. And that's saying that you care enough about the situation, the person, whatever is going on, that you want to be at your best. So these are the conditions that will have you be at your best.
Right.
And that is, you know, when we initially start talking is that make sure the kindness extends both ways. It's an equation. It goes this way, it goes that way. But I often think we're also coming from a place of being nice. And to me, nice and kind are fundamentally different. Nice is, I think nice gets crapped on. I actually think there's a place for it. Nice is about pleasantries. It's about manners. It's about making people comfortable.
Yes.
That's not a terrible thing in a restaurant.
It's not a terrible thing. It's
100%
valid in the places that it's necessary, needed, or
absolutely
right, properly utilized. Yeah. Right. Context. Thank you.
And kindness is about taking a stand for what's important in the world. And so it's not just for other people, but it's also for you. And it's really creating the world you want to live in. So I think often we think we can't have, especially if we identify as a kind person or don't feel we're kind or are conflict averse, any of those things that are kind of the umbrella it falls under. We don't think boundaries are an act of kindness. And if you are a fundamentally kind person, or have not seen boundaries done in a kind way, or don't think kind people can have boundaries, whatever, you will do anything if you value kindness to avoid being an unkind person.
Yeah.
Even if that means you get walked all over, even if that means you get treated like crap.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'm saying those boundaries are an act of saying, hey, I think you're a really good person and you're capable of more. So I'm going to hold you to this higher standard. I'm not giving up on you. I'm not giving up on me. Often people rise to the occasion. So it creates a pathway for that to happen.
It is amazing, right? Because like sort of shifting the conversation away from like a malignant narcissist who's not remotely interested in honoring your boundaries, but to some, to people who actually honor and respect it, when it's kind of shocking. It's kind of shocking when you, when you set a boundary and in a kind, out of kindness for yourself and the other person, the response can be quite the opposite of what you've been so afraid of, right? Exactly. What you resist persists, right? So we're like actively working to avoid something. But then when we shift our way of being around it, it just kind of all disappears.
Right. And sometimes people don't get it right away. And I think if we're changing our boundaries, particularly with existing relationships, that's shaky ground. What are they doing? People don't know where they stand in our life anymore. They're not sure how to relate to us. They don't know where they sort of rank in our life. And that's scary. But as they start to see us honoring that boundary and them seeing, oh, actually, I'm fine. I'm living. Often that initial resistance or pushback, which I don't think is a bad thing, it shows you've been heard. And people are trying to understand it.
Interesting.
That often opens it up in a way that has never been opened up before and is exactly what you're talking about, that it's sort of magical.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
I want to go back to that resistance piece because I think that's really important. And I talk about this a lot too, is that the way that I talk about it is that, you know, we're all like puzzle pieces, right? And we've all had our fixed shape forever, right? And when you're changing the rules of the game, and it's a game that you've been playing for a long ass time, you're shifting the shape of your puzzle piece, and that creates tension.
Absolutely.
And, you know, eventually the pieces around you either have to conform or they pop out. Right. Like, and it, but there's that period of tension where, like you said, they're trying to figure out where they stand in your life now, if you're changing the rules. And I think one of the most fundamental pieces of this is communication and how we communicate these changes. So often we set boundaries with no communication whatsoever, right?
We're just, right.
I'm going to be different now. I have self-esteem, or I'm not going to take your shit anymore. Or, you know, I'm just not going to stand for that anymore. Right. But we don't actually say, hey, you know how I've been doing the laundry for the last 6 years? I actually am kind of tired of it, and I'm going to needs to change the rules here. And now I would like to, you know, invite all members of the family to do their own laundry. Right. And most of us we just stopped doing the fucking laundry.
Right.
Right. Everyone's like, why don't I have clean socks? What's going on here?
Right.
Right. So there's a way to communicate through it that will ease the tension. That's kind.
I love that puzzle analogy. That's great. That's so well done. And I think it gives it such a clear picture and understanding. And I feel like, well, the first thing, I think when there's any pushback or resistance, a lot of people say, see, I can't have boundaries. They're not going to change. You know, there's this like, there's any resistance. Yes. At all. And sometimes they're just confused because we didn't communicate it well, or it just is going to take a little time to understand that, okay, this is different. I'm not harmed in this necessarily. Things are just different. And
or it's a habit, right? And it takes like a long ass time for a new habit to be formed. It's you know, it's neuroscience. These are neural pathways that you're like forcing someone to rewire.
Exactly. And so that pushback that we might get is a lot of times people just say, screw it at that point. I say, wow, they've heard you. That's actually evidence that you've been heard. And it might need more clarification. It might need more time. It might, who knows what that means. You can look at that for yourself. But that's actually not a bad sign that you're getting pushback. It means you've been understood. So when I'm talking to people about how to articulate and communicate their boundaries, I often ask, what do you think is at risk for the other person? And let's communicate it in a way that shows either mitigates that risk or if they're just, you know, really look at what they hope you see in them or what they're afraid might happen, let's communicate in a way that actually speaks to that concern, which will soothe it.
Yes.
It is big. And so we might not have to say, I bet you're really concerned that I'm going to X, Y, and Z. You don't have to do that. But if you know that X, Y, and Z is a big thing for them, you can say, you know, let's go back to the laundry thing. this probably feels like a really big shift. Over time, it is for me too, and I'll really appreciate any feedback you have and how we're going to navigate this moving forward. That's something I need to do. and trying to communicate that is, pack it, bake it within that cake that you serve.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I always say that literally the biggest boundary you can possibly set in your life is to ask for a divorce. Right? Is to say that you no longer want to be married to someone is a huge boundary. Yes. And this is a conversation when I talk my clients through how to tell someone that you want a divorce.
Right.
This is that's exactly a huge part of it, right? Like speaking into it's sort of like old weird landmark language, but like speaking into someone's listening, right? Understanding who you're talking to, how they might respond, what are their values, what are their needs, right? By the time you're asking someone for a divorce, you know them pretty damn well, right. At least you should. Right. And so this is about understanding what they're, like you said, what their concerns are, what are their biggest fears going to be, right? And so if it's like that, you're going to take away the kids. Like I want you to know that I am not here to take away your children.
Absolutely.
I am here to facilitate the most collaborative, cooperative process that we can possibly get through, in service of our children. Right.
Well, people are lucky to have you. Really, because that's so important, and you're holding that bigger picture and reminding them of who they want to be.
Yes,
who they can be in that process. So it's really beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, sometimes it's harder because they are coming up against such pushback or anger, right? And I sort of take a multi-stepped approach to this conversation because for just the reasons that we're talking about, because you need to give them time to process information and then come back to it. Right. And so when they're like, well, what's going to happen now and who's going to keep the house and da da da, I say that's actually a boundary right there. It's like, I absolutely want to talk about all of that. And we are going to sort through all of that stuff right now. I think we should just sort of come to terms with this information.
Yes.
Right. First.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's also difficult.
It's big.
It is big. Yeah. I feel like I want to talk about kindness versus niceness even more, because there's something that we've talked about in previous conversations about kindness. That when you're setting a boundary, there's something about the kindness, the two-way streetedness of kindness, that it's not just about being kind to others.
Right.
Right. There's, it's a.
Right. So it has to.
Words aren't working for me. Right,
you're doing very well.
Your turn.
that kindness has to include you or it is incomplete. Mm-hmm. And I often feel that, people, huge hearts, doing whatever they can to be kind to other people or be in service. And I think there's a lot of dogma if it's caught up in that. But really trying to be a good person at the expense of being a good person to themselves. Because that's part of it. And, I think if I'm on the other side of it and somebody's really trying to be kind to me, if I found out that it was at the expense of their own health or they were actually making offers they hope I decline because they didn't want me to feel left out, that would feel awful. That's actually not kind to me at all to put me in that position. I say to my clients, don't offer what you hope somebody will decline, because nobody wants to be on the other end of your invitation with you secretly hoping, say no, say no, say no, say no, say no. That feels like,
oh my God, that feels terrible. And just energetically, what you're putting into the sort of space in the relationship, energetically, that's just like, bleh.
So that kindness often, on the surface, and that's where I think it becomes nice. You're being nice. So you're extending an invitation so somebody doesn't feel left out. There might be a lot of things in between them completely, radio silence and being invited to a party you don't want them to be at, for example. That would work. Asking how their day was, all these things. But I think we're so uncomfortable with silence sometimes. I think what we think in being kind to others, when that requires huge self-sacrifice and unkindness toward ourselves, it's not kind. And ultimately, then it's not actually kind to the other person, because we're doing things unkind in the name of kindness toward them, which if they knew, they probably would be really upset about.
And generally those things kind of leak out the edges, right? Like,
no, absolutely.
Because that's where resentments build up, yeah. And that's where, and they don't know why you resent them. It was just because you invited them to a party that you didn't want them to come to. And like, they're so innocent, right? Suddenly we hate them.
So that kindness being a two-way street is huge. Mm-hmm. If you're only doing it one way, you know, even if it's just toward the you way, it's not actually kind. So,
right.
And that's a big, I want boundaries to have not just hold space for that, but be create the space for that.
Yes, I agree. Tell me what is your big picture dream for the people of the world? Like, what do you want everyone to know?
People of the world, listen up.
Dear Randy now.
it kind of comes down to this for me. I remember several people asking me what my favorite quote was. Hmm. And I have many for different situations, but they were always expecting some far out feminist something. And it's actually William Shakespeare with Mark Twain being a very close second, but same response to that. To thine own self be true. Mm. And that really for me is when we are true to ourselves and living the lives that are true to us, it actually benefits everybody because the world just got all that more aligned to truth. And I almost picture like a chiropractic adjustment when happening to the spine. When truth happens, other things into place. I hope your listeners appreciate sound effects. because it just got a little more true for everybody. Consequently, you know, that our healing is the world's healing.
Yeah.
And so it has a huge effect what we do for ourselves and in honoring what's right for us and doing the work that is right for us, making choices that are really hard but are ultimately right for us. I think that benefits everybody. I guess that would be my alien announcement to the world.
I love that. And there's a distinction though that I also want to like bring up here.
Sure.
Between your to thine own self be true. Yes. Right. And then we also have to again, infuse it with kindness, right?
Because right.
The other side of that is sort of an Ayn Rand objectivist, you know, whatever, right. My way or the highway,
right.
No consequence for others. Right. And that can right. be, that's sort of the nefarious side of other side of the coin.
Right.
Right.
And thank you for saying that. Cause for me, it's really about context, nuance, and discernment. Mm-hmm. And living what's true, you know, if it's bringing those values that are important to you to life, that's when that works.
Yes.
What if it's, you know, here's a line in the sand, take it, leave it, my way or the highway. there's no flexibility in that. And there's gotta be some flexibility, like a tree, like a spine. That's what allows us to move. And that's what creates the grace for that to be able to happen. So I definitely appreciate you're calling that.
Yeah. What do you do? This is just coming up for me. What do you do when you're on the, cause I have a lot of clients who are on the other side of that. Mm-hmm. On the receiving end of my way or the highway. You knew who I was when I married you. I haven't changed. that's kind of a boundary, right? It's not a very kind boundary.
Right.
It's not inviting.
Right.
What do people do on the receiving end of that?
They get to define their own bottom line. They get to define their own garden gate. And if you're being met with something is rude my way, you knew me when you got married to me type of thing, it sounds like that unfortunately a lot of people are experiencing, mm-hmm. You get to decide what your line is. Meaning that's their edge. What's yours?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean just because they're saying that doesn't mean that is your instruction.
Right.
You get to live by what is right. And what that instruction is for you, what value you want to honor. Yeah. And that takes a lot of work, but ultimately, as long as you're honoring it, it will be honored.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that, you know, values work is such a huge part of what I do with clients when we're talking about staying or going, because values like that,
right.
that are so deeply misaligned is a huge red flag that this is, you know, possibly not going to work out.
Right.
Randy, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure. Is there anything else that you want to sort of say or tell people? You have a podcast coming up. You're starting your own podcast.
I am. And you've been such a such an inspiration and champion of that. So thank you very much. Yeah, I have a podcast coming up soon. I'm calling it Sideways Truth. And yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. It's not just about boundaries. It's all sorts of stuff.
Do you have a launch date for it yet? Or should we just
hopefully within the next week or two, we'll have the launch date.
Excellent. Excellent. That'll be in the show notes. So Randy's podcast link will be in the show notes for those of you who want more of Randy Buckley. And I highly recommend that you get more.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And like I said, thank you for the work that you're doing with your clients. They're smart to do that work with you.
Oh.
Very big time.
Thank you. And back at you. Back at you.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Divorce Survival Guide podcast. You can find me over at kateanthony.com and be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes so you don't miss an episode. See you next time.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.